Wednesday, August 24th, 2019, Police Facility Council Committee.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here this evening. Just to get started, let's go ahead and do a round of introductions for the record. I'm Alan Dannen with Public Works.
Chris Hoy, City Council, Ward 6.
Chuck Bennett, Mayor.
Matt Offit, Ward 5.
Luke Mazel, Public Works Engineer.
Kyle Bayline with J.E. Dunn.
Steve Belshaw, Salem Police.
Ricardo Besserol with ACPM, Owners Representative.
And Gina Postier, Public Works.
Great, thanks again, everybody. I think we'll be able to get through our agenda pretty quickly tonight, now that we have a guaranteed maximum price with J.E. Dunn. We'll give you all an update on construction and where we stand there, and a couple of details related to what's going on with the building. Do a budget update to kind of show where everything fell out now that we have a guaranteed maximum price and all our funding in place, and schedule as well. And then just talk a little bit about what's coming up and where we are with our efforts for outreach to the public. So with that, I think, starting out just generally with where we are in the project schedule. So we're squarely into the construction phase here, the big yellow block, closing in on the end of 2019 and still holding fast for September of 2020. And Kyle, I think, we're gonna kick it to, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, just one thing on the prior slide, I get asked quite a bit, what is the specific date in September that we're gonna hit? And if it truly was critical to hit a specific date, we could pin that down with J.E. Dunn, but it does fluctuate a little bit back and forth. And when it starts fluctuating in a significant way, we'll sit down and have a conversation about is there a benefit to expediting the schedule to make sure that the date is still September? Are these 3 days really worth working some overtime for to make it happen? We'll do a cost-benefit analysis and make sure we're making wise decisions.
And that's based on when the police need to get ready to move over? Is that really what we're working against?
Really, the original thought process was based on the 85% spend down bond funds within 3 years.
Okay.
We do have a little bit of flexibility in that September time period, but even though the schedule could slip by a few days, and plus or minus here and there, it's not really incredibly significant since we don't have kids going showing up to school or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But it does cost us money to have J.E. Dunn out on site as
right.
well. And so there's advantages to expediting in some cases, and in other cases that expediting cost is too expensive and it would make more sense just to let the schedule slip by a couple of days.
So when will you know a precise, are you looking at June, July or something like that? I mean, is that...
As far as being able to hone in on an exact
really, where
date.
You say on an exact date, where you've set it up based on pulling everybody out and getting the police ready to move in. I mean, do you have a time that you're looking at where you can announce a date?
Yeah, I would say probably, I mean, we haven't talked about it specifically, but I'd say that by that time period, we're through the weather risks.
Yeah.
A lot of the risks are, I mean, I'd say once we kind of turn the hurdle on the weather and we're into the later part of spring, we can probably hone in pretty well on a specific date and make it happen.
Great. Yeah. And that'll be done against these cost items you mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Kyle, you want to talk a little bit about construction progress?
Sure. So a lot has happened. Seems like we just met, but a lot has happened between now and then. We had our topping out party since then. And some of you have already heard this, but we had 100 to date as of the topping out party, so through July. We had 150 craft on site, individual. We've poured 5,700 cubic yards of concrete, 411 tons of rebar. Just to kind of put in perspective the amount of work that is going in place and the men and women that are doing that, how much effort they put in. Picture on the left, you can see, of course, the concrete structure is in place. You can see the blue safety net, and then there's barricades, and then the thing that's kind of sticking out is the stud framing that spans, you can kind of see the shiny silver that's at each level, and the openings that are deliberately left out for, as you can imagine, for windows and different components. I have been asked several times, why in the world did you guys start at the top of the building? And it's very calculating because you need that in place to install the roof. And it rains in Oregon, and we're trying to make sure we're dried in a timely fashion to continue stuff happening inside. The middle picture, speaking of rain, are the lines that come off the roof that will drain the water back down into the system. And then one thing, it's really, really hard to see, but I think I talked in here at one point about we're inserting, before we pour, if you go up to a deck and you walk around, there's all these different color things that we put in, and we call them blue bangers. They go in the formwork, and then you pour, and then when you take the formwork down, there's a hole, and you can thread things into it. It's really important because the alternative is there's men and women out there drilling holes every, you know, few inches, and it takes a lot of, I won't spend a lot of time, I could talk to you about it for a day, but it takes a lot of coordination, and 3D would build the whole thing. And so this is the fruits of that. So you see they hit exactly where they could put screw a hanger in, and it hit exactly where a pipe we needed to go, and so we're starting to see that take effect.
You might not think about that as being a safety issue too, but really doing it this way is much safer too than you can imagine somebody up there in a lift.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The damage that you're going to do to your shoulder by doing that upside down, not
yeah.
good.
Yeah. The picture on the right, concrete masonry units that are going in, I believe this is guns and, no, it's money and drugs, I yeah. think. Rooms, and they do them in 4-foot lifts just because there's only so much before you start squishing back down on itself. I think that's pretty much all I was gonna say, unless anybody has any questions. So the community room structure in the southwest corner, September 6th is where we're beginning that or thereabout. The parking structure, so we finished all the footings for the building, we topped out the building. The next move is get the footings for the precast garage in place prior to the precast showing up. So we had a little bit of time to focus on the building, and we knew that we weren't going to delay because the precast isn't showing up to a certain date. So time is coming to start those. We talked about the stud framing. After that, we're going to put up sheathing and then waterproofing, and then you'll start to see windows go in and metal flashing, and it's going to start looking like it's the end result.
And it's not going to rain until after these days, right?
Ideally.
Way until after then.
Yeah, but we've,
good.
I mean, I'm probably going too long, so speed me up, Alan, but we've, one thing that we've done to mitigate that is, so traditionally you put up sheathing and then you apply the vapor barrier to it, or fluid applied barrier. So those are being shop applied, and so you're really only dealing with the joints. So yeah, water is a problem, but we'll get through it.
Okay.
Roofing we talked about, yeah, I hit all those. So safety, Ricardo hit on one topic that is important. So we have, you hear all these people talking about recordables, injuries, lost time, how much does it cost, workman's comp. So we have a really robust safety program, and we focus on, and you unfortunately are probably hearing it too much with the economy now, but leading indicators, which are things that are pointing in the direction of this could eventually cause an injury. So what can we do to mitigate that? And I was just going to talk a little bit about that. Some things we do, pre-planning, which seems really simple, but when we're focused on how are we going to build something, we are thinking of how are we going to do it safely. So like Ricardo said, inserting the deck inserts. We also put tie-off points in the deck ahead of time that will just get cut off later, so people have a safe place to tie off if they need to. And we also think about, usually you're thinking about construction here, but we're also thinking of things like facilities and how are they going to access things. Do we need a bigger hole for them to get up in the ceiling or whatever safely? We do several things to engage positively with the craft. So it used to be safe and we'll reward you. Now it's everyone, it's getting everyone to work together to be safe. And that's just what we do, that's how we operate. So aside from engineering out risks like we just talked about, we do something called a five-craft lunch, which means five people selected at random come to lunch with myself and Matt Jones, who's our superintendent. And it's just like, do you feel safe during your day? You tell us what can we do in a safe environment, and people really open up. I've covered a bunch, so I'm gonna skip a little bit unless anyone's interested. So we talked about leading. So continuous improvement. So if we have one thing that comes out of the positive safety culture is we want people to tell us if something is going on. And so encouraging, not punishing, you know, and someone will say, well, this, I'm making this up, by the way, this bolt dropped through the opening in the picture there. It didn't hurt anybody, nothing broke, and we'll say, okay, well, that could have been a problem. So we'll sit down and we go through what we call is a root cause analysis process. It's like, well, what can we put in place to prevent this, because the next time it could be a problem? And we continuously go through the cycle to get better, more safe on site.
What does your lost time look like right now? Do you have any? Zero.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah. One thing that gets overlooked sometimes, in my opinion, is if you walk on site and how clean it is, and people want to come to work. People want to keep it that clean, and people feel happy and safe when they come to work. So we've had 9,500 labor hours in total, 2,835 observations. So that's us going out and saying, the whole team, so myself, project engineers, superintendents, executives, saying, this looks safe, this doesn't look safe, hey, you may want to look at this with a different set of eyes, which helps us feed keeping people safe. And then we've had zero reportables.
That's great.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the picture, because I know you guys have got a pretty robust program centered around trying to think of alternatives to ladders.
Yeah, thank you. So we have what we call a Ladders Last program, and this really cool stairs, almost a ladder,
yeah,
that came out. It's so neat. I mean, you can put the stair at any angle and adjust the the steps. I think you guys might have been on it if you walked.
Yeah.
But if you can traditionally...
It doesn't feel super great.
No, it's definitely better than a ladder. But
traditionally, I mean, a long time ago, we used to have just massive ladders that carpenters would build up to the building, and then we started doing landings with ladders that are built. But if you think of going up and down there every day, it's just not an ideal situation, and this is in place until we get our final stairs poured. So this was one thing that Matt Jones, our superintendent, came up with that I think we're going to start doing on all of our jobs, because it's just a game changer for people.
Yeah, I've never seen this on a project before. I thought it was great.
You can see it when you're driving by.
Yeah. Yeah, and knowing how many accidents are a result of improper ladder use on project sites, this, I think, workers definitely appreciate.
Yes, very much.
And I think it's one of those things that Jay Dunn is leading. I know that Mike Day, the founder of ACPM, was out on site the other day, saw this for the first time as well. We haven't seen this on one of our project sites before, and he's making note of it and probably going to implement it on other projects as well. So,
where are they manufactured? Where do they come from?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I know, well, I have it in my email. I don't know off the top of my head, though. Anything else on safety?
So yeah, our thought process is we'll continue to provide safety updates, probably a little bit less detail about J.D. Dunn's process, and a little bit more just make sure you're up to speed on labor hours and any incidents or accidents or leading indicators, things that have kind of come up on the project site that J.D. Dunn's been studying, just hit on that a little bit. Asking about workforce. I know you guys have talked about workforce before in the past, about labor and local workforce. And so one way that we can track that with J.D. Dunn is once they do get a significant stable crew out there on the project site, is to pull the certified payroll for a week and actually just go through the certified payroll and track how many of the workers, not the businesses themselves, but how many of the workers have an address in Salem.
That'd be great.
And be able to track that by percentage. We thought that might be something interesting for you to know, sort of on a quarterly basis or something like that. So
And then also we brought in the city risk manager to meet with J.E. Dunn just to talk about what might trigger us notifying the city risk manager, just different, just because people might associate something that happened on site with the city. And so we've already had those discussions ahead of time.
Right.
Hopefully we don't.
It was a good thing to do for sure. Okay, moving on to project budget. So we've showed this slide before, but essentially now we've worked our way all the way through the guaranteed maximum price. And so this shows all the early work amendments that we put together getting to this point, and then the guaranteed maximum that was approved in August. So total is just over $58.4 million. When you throw in the pre-construction amount that J.E. Dunn did with us, alongside with us, through the design, it's a little over 58.8. This is basically our construction total, although there are a few items that happened before J.E. Dunn came on board, like the demolition of the existing buildings out there,
right,
rerouting the sewer from Mill Creek Plaza, and a couple other details there. But other than that, this covers all of the construction, this number right here, the 58.4.
And this doesn't include the street.
It does include
the street.
Yeah.
It does say on-site GMP amendment there, so it's a little bit misleading.
You're right.
Okay.
Should just say GMP amendment. So this is resurrecting the slide that we started with way back when, but now it's updated with the up-to-date budget numbers. It includes both on-site, the project, and the off-site work, which is the transportation street work, and where we stand. So construction spent through August 19th about $9 million. Total spent between soft costs, which that includes our design, which is essentially most of the way done now. The architects are just supporting us through construction, and the property acquisition. Those are the two big parts of this purple piece here. So we're up over $21 million spent now, and then $55 million projected through completion. And we are representing the contingency, the owner contingency that we have left. So this is money that the owner controls for any unknowns that come up.
Like the street risk and things like that we've talked about. When we start doing the street work, there's significant risk out there. Unexpected things come up, that's where that funding would come from.
So we're fully covered then. There's nothing, there won't be any further funds needed.
Yeah.
We're good. Okay.
That's right.
We're going to get anything back?
You usually do.
Yeah, I thought we might.
Yeah.
What happens to that money when it comes back? What's it going to go into?
I think right now it's designated to go into the city hall.
Yeah, the way we wrote the bond measure was that any surplus funds could be used here.
To fix up the...
Yeah, for tenant improvements, primarily after the police move out.
Okay, great.
Anything else on this work?
I don't think so.
All right, so this is a more detailed look at our contingency tracking. Ricardo, you want to talk
about
this one?
So we're providing you all the detail up to date right now in this slide. On a regular basis, what we'll do is we'll just snapshot this with the latest activities and impacts to contingency. But what it really shows you, and I don't expect you to be able to read it in that line of print, but the very top number, the original total budgeted owner reserves was $4.4 million. The first blue header says the pre-GMP CCIs, construction change issues. So pre-GMP, so prior to us executing this GMP with J.E. Dunn, these are the different impacts. Anytime that there was a transaction, a contingency, whether or not it was money that we got and used, for instance, in this line item 27 and 28, when we added the urban renewal funds for the building, per the 7-8-19 action, that was $2.6 million that got injected into the project. We used contingency to run that money through contingency and then run it back out in line item 28, transfer that money into the construction budget line item. So it really shows you at any point in time what happened to the owner contingency. So we'll be able to track that down to the penny. That rolls down into the black line item just above post-GMP that says, so at the point in time where we executed a GMP with J.E. Dunn, we had $2.3 million just over that in contingency. Since that point in time, the only line item that we've funded from contingency is the line item 01, which is that our, due to the way that we've phased the project, our city of Salem permit budget needed some more injection into that line item to be able to fund it. So right now, we're sitting at $2.260,206 million. And so what that'll look like in the future is we'll just continue to show you basically from here, subtotal owner reserves at GMP signing, and then we'll show you the line items. And when this gets too long, we'll just start highlighting the yellow ones that we just show you the stuff since, what's come up since the last time we met with you. Go ahead and continue with this. Yeah, so this is basically a roll-up of our detailed budget. So this is what we use. There's several line items and categories that go under the construction costs, for instance, as Alan pointed out. That line item adds up to $54,745,000 and change, which doesn't match J.E. Dunn's GMP. The reason being is that if you unroll that line item, it also includes the demolition, which was outside of J.E. Dunn's scope of work. So every single one of these categories, we have got several line items that roll up into it, but what we track is we track the first column here of budget. That combined with the separate dollars for the urban renewal budget for the off-site scope of work, that's that second column in. We track that against the cost to date. So as Alan mentioned, we've spent more than $21 million, as the bottom number reflects. That bottom number then ties back into that pie chart that shows you split between hard costs and soft costs, how much money we've actually spent to date, and what the balance is left to spend. So a lot of people end up asking, so where's the risk? The risk on the project is up here in the construction, in that J.E. Dunn is carrying a construction contingency as well. The majority of their GMP is are contracts that are committed, but they also carry some risk in constructing the building, and they account for that risk in carrying a contractor's contingency. And so eventually we're developing the process that we can use to be able to give you some exposure to ballpark big picture status of how is their contingency looking within their GMP, because the way the contract is written, what they don't spend goes back to you. So theoretically, there will be a point in time, if everything goes really well, where J.E. Dunn will come to us and say, you know, the risk that we have remaining on the project is X, Y, or Z percentage wise, and yet we've only spent a small amount of our contingency. And so are there things that you would like to do at this point in time on the police facility that we haven't acted on? Let's say we hadn't accepted some safety feature because we weren't sure if we could afford it or not. At some point in time, their remaining risk on the project versus the amount of money that they're holding in construction contingency, there might be some decisions that we'll ask you to advise us on.
Do you have, because we did cut a lot of, it seemed like at times, small things. Is there an add back list that you have developed?
There is a lot.
Pull that stuff back in if you can.
Yeah, there's... Excuse me. A lot of those items we added into the actual ask when we went to council. So things like, you know, making sure we build the full parking structure, make sure that we have all of the window film on all the windows, not 50% of the windows. But there is another tier that there's plenty of items that we had cut, and we should definitely develop that next tier of items to look at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Questions about budget?
Do you really think $100,000 is going to cover the moving costs?
Yeah, I'm kind of...
Don't know until we actually dig into that a little bit more.
That seems pretty low.
Yeah.
With evidence that they could be low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're carrying all your own stuff.
That's a lot of here.
Yeah, that'll... Well, maybe get the firefighters to help you.
We may tell the officers, if you want your stuff, but then they'll...
You have to move it over.
Carry it.
Okay, so this kind of ties right into that. Go ahead, Trevor.
Yeah, so kind of ongoing and future soft cost efforts. So we talked about, you know, the big push has been really honing in on the biggest bite out of the apple, which is J.D. Dunn's GMP, and so we have that GMP established. Now there's this category of additional items that we haven't locked in what the commitments are, and so we're doing a really hard push right now with Pacific Furnishings, making sure that we're working together with the police department and DLR and CB2, and making sure we're selecting the right furnishings with the right number of USB ports and plugins above the desk versus below the desk, and you know, really make all those fine-tuned decisions, which of course affects the budget as well. And so we're really trying to hone in on, is there surplus in those line items as well? Hopefully not any need to, we think we're covered in there, so hopefully there's no need to have to dive into additional contingency funds to fund those items, but it would be really nice surprise to find out that we have a little bit of extra in those categories as well. So we're trying to refine that. Police department has applied for multiple grants that could positively affect this project. One we found out about a while ago that we didn't get, which related to generator going from a 24-hour to a 72-hour fuel capacity, and they weren't successful in getting that. But there's another grant that was applied for that affects some of the crime lab equipment. I think we find out about that in September.
I believe so, yeah.
So that could help. So we balance out those grants also with some equipment budget line items that we have, as well as some GMP items that are within J.E. Dunn's guaranteed maximum price right now for various equipment line items, and try to figure out what's the best way to purchase that. So J.E. Dunn, as an example, shares with us that, hey, the vendor that we got to quote X, Y, or Z piece of crime lab equipment quoted it at this. We then research and reach back out to the police department, who talked to one of the deputy chiefs, who talked to their line level staff and end up asking a question, and it comes back that, hey, there's another vendor out there. So we asked J.E. Dunn to explore that other vendor for additional competitive pricing, and that pricing comes back and it's a better price. And so we're really trying to make sure and not leave any dollars on the table when it comes to purchasing the equipment in the right way and making sure we're getting the best price for the best stuff. There's IT related equipment, so there's probably a good $350,000-$400,000 worth of IT switches, network closet gear that's going to go into the facility that we're working closely with TJ, with the City of Salem and IT, sort of the City of Salem Police Department liaison on the IT side to work on purchasing that equipment. We're also looking at repurposing some of the existing furniture and equipment, such as the chief and the deputy chief's offices, that Oregon Corrections Enterprises, I'm not sure how old that equipment or that furniture is. It's only a couple years old, so we're supplementing it. We've already gone in with Oregon Corrections and DLR and taken measurements of the existing furniture in those offices and what can be added on to, and they still make that same furniture, so we can add on to it so it doesn't look like a hodgepodge of different furniture offerings to make those offices complete. So that's one way that we're looking at repurposing some stuff to save money. DACPM has brought in additional supplemental help to me in the form of a gal named Susan Montgomery, who's helping work with the police department on organizing a purging effort to make sure we're not going to be moving stuff into the police department that that they don't need to move into the police department, and also be the
closets.
Good luck,
detectives. I need all of my case
all my stuff.
For some of that equipment, have you been talking at all to the state police? I know they purchased a lot of that. Some of the contracts can be reused.
We tried to think outside the box a little bit, and that because the state police crime lab is so overworked, that we said if you would help us with funding, we would become a regional crime lab and we would do all the fingerprint work for Marion and Polk counties. And they considered that. It finally got up to a certain level and they said, no, we're not interested in doing that. But we're going to continue to look at some of those things. But even if we could get those other agencies to contribute money to the salary of another crime lab person and pay for some of those things, and that, I mean, you know, the bad guys just go between city to city, and so their bad guys are our bad guys, so whatever we can do to help catch them is helpful, so. And then we do buy a lot of stuff off the state contract, so.
That's what I'm listening to.
Yeah.
I know we're actually doing a couple of major projects for, that I think would probably be able to purchase off of.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the last line item is also just the overall planning. It's not too soon to start planning for the actual logistics of the move, and so we're starting to have those conversations with the police department about what that actually looks like. And we'll continue to update you as we get further along that path.
So the good thing is we hired a new evidence room supervisor. She's been with us about 2 years, and she came from Hillsborough, so she already moved an evidence room once. So she's already been through this one. So.
Wow. That'd be big help.
Yeah.
Okay, last on our list is public outreach, Steve.
So, we had our J.E. Dunn summer intern, Ethan Libby, so he spent the summer on site. First high school intern that J.E. Dunn has had in their project, so kudos to them for being willing to do that.
Yeah.
So after spending all summer at the job site, today he came down to take a tour of the current site. And, so it was, he was less impressed. So he was really excited, and he has a presentation to J.E. Dunn staff next week.
Yeah.
So
the 30th is his last day. So yeah, it's a couple
days. But he is. I mean, they seem to like him down there. I haven't found him stuffed in any lockers or anything. Down there, so they.
We give him
a Dr. Bold on his head.
We give him meaningful work.
He helps. That's very good.
Suppose it's been very eye-opening for him.
Yeah. So, and you saw the big news article of J.E. Dunn had reached out to us and said, how can we help the community? And so, with my ties with Center for Hope and Safety, they had some projects, and so that went really well.
Yeah, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, of course.
That's great.
We continue to work with Blessing Hancock, our artist, so we have compiled a list of words from the community. Some we just eliminated right up. God donuts. That's not going on. Bacon. And
do you have a list of those we can see?
Then? Yeah. So we'll
this council get a chance to
over that. Just missed the code.
We may want to kind of double check you on those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. And so we're doing that. So National Night Out, again, was a very positive. J.E. Dunn came out, and of course, one of our themes at the parties was to thank the community for their support for this and just give them an update. Kyle talked about the Topping Out celebration. That was well attended. It was a good, positive thing. We had a bunch of officers that ate lunch, you know, of course, free food, so of course they're going to respond and eat lunch. But they enjoyed talking with the workers and stuff like that, and so yeah.
From the it's really cool for us because that's purpose
great.
Statement for the project, and then they put it on the volunteer shirts for the
so that worked out really well. And so, you know, of course we've been doing a lot of the media outreach, social media stuff. At the Topping Out ceremony, Darren, I don't remember who Darren's actual position.
Matt Braun talked at the Topping Out.
No, but Darren was at the Topping Out ceremony.
He's our office.
He talked about the building buzz and the social media efforts and that he's recommend that nationally of method of transparency for public construction. So, and then we got a kudos from the Secretary of State's office about our Twitter and the updates and stuff, and that they thought that was a great example. So we'll continue to do that. I have talked to Cappy Lynn about doing an article about what we're going to display in the department. And so we're going to do an article and ask people that live in Salem. So there are probably people that Grandpa was a Salem police officer in the 30s that may have a badge or uniform or something lying around that they're willing to donate. I also sent out, we have a retiree email, so I asked them for old photos and things, and I gave them a period of amnesty for any Salem police equipment that may have accidentally left about the same time they left our employment, that if they wanted to, if they thought it was of historical value, that they could bring that back. So I've already started to get some pictures. And so the one thing I didn't get to tell you guys the other day, so in the history of Salem Police Department, we've only had one officer killed. That was Thomas Eckhart in 1909. This last week I was contacted by his great-grandson, and he finally identified a picture of Thomas Eckhart. So finally, after all these years, we will have a picture. So
oh, that's great.
The 110th anniversary of his end of watch will be October 1st of this year. So we plan on doing something, and we'll unveil the photo at that anniversary. So that's
great.
Actually kind of cool. So to have that after all these years. So we'll continue that outreach and the things that we'll display in the building. We've managed to save a few things. We had a officer that was shot responding to a burglary, and we still have the gun that he was shot with, and some of those things. So we'll figure out ways to display those things as well. So we'll continue that outreach.
Okay. I think that's the last thing on our list for tonight. I didn't tell Judy this, so she has a different next meeting date than I do, but our intent would be, unless there's objections, to just have these meetings quarterly from here on out, and we would report to you all on these same categories of items, probably update the same slides. So if that sounds all right to folks.
Do you think you ought to, at any point, you need to come in and meet with the whole council and bring them up to date on any of this stuff? Would you feel?
We certainly could.
So we can do it either way. We can do it informally in small group meetings like we've done in the past, whatever you guys think would be most effective. And
well, that was just a really good update, very quick, and I think it explains where we are. I don't know when to do it again, but I think at some point finding out kind of where is all the money and the way, really how well you're tracking and how that'll play out. I don't think folks would be disappointed to understand it maybe just a little bit better. It helps you when you're talking to neighborhood groups to have any kind of inside information that lets you explain it a little quicker and clearer. So.
Yeah.
I mentioned Alan had given me a sheet that I think is extraordinarily helpful. I think the only hard question I had from that was you mentioned one of the cost savings occurred because you were able to eliminate some electrical outlets. Mm-hmm. And so I had a guy say, well, then you bought a whole bunch of those strips, so there's going to be those power strips all over. And I had no good answer for that.
So we can send that out. And
it's really good.
And probably what we should do is we'll send out those milestone marks of, you know, on September 6th that we're going to start framing in the community room and stuff like that. And so we'll try and send those out fairly regularly, because those are really handy for you to have at meetings when people say, what's going on with the building? So you can say, these are the next steps.
A couple months ago, I had a guy email. I'm going to meet with him because I just want to see this person who lives near the police station, who sent me a note saying, what are they doing? I had no idea what that building is or what you're building.
This is sighing.
I just want to meet someone that clueless. But I do think for us, when you're in these meetings, anything you have that kind of lets you talk about this with some authority, with things you want us to, you want the public to know, it's
absolutely
really great for counselors to work with, I think.
Yeah. I know from experience being at those meetings, it's nice to have those talking points. And, so we'll try and get those to you at least on a monthly basis. The milestones of what's going on with the building and that kind of stuff. And
Well, again, I really recommend Alan's sheet. It was so easy to work with and sound authoritative without being particularly knowledgeable.
Yeah.
It was really helpful.
Yeah, I'll send it to the group.
And then if you can do the updates and then see if counselors want to sit down with you on their own. Let them
absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll be happy to do that.
Very good. I think that's it for tonight, unless there's any other questions. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.